Mr. Cyber at Real 11, we were talking about the time in December, January, February of the winter of 1944-45 when you were sent to Greece, to Salonika, where you were acting as a covering force to prevent trouble with ELAS. What do you remember of your actual duties then during that period? There's not much fighting, you say. Was there any?
No, it was mainly a case, as far as we were concerned, of stopping the Greeks from killing each other. You had the royalists, who were also armed, and the ELAS, or the EAM, who were heavily armed. We had the funny position where both of us were, the foresters and the ELAS were guarding the same place. The power station, which was part of the building that one of the docks at Salonika, and they would mount guard facing us, and we would mount guard, and they would endeavour to copy our drill. It was quite humorous, really, but I got on quite well with these chaps. They didn't show any hostility to
were there any incidents?
Well, we were several times sent to very big demonstrations. I would think they were compulsory demonstrations organised by the ELAS, where the main square in Salonika was filled with people. Usually used to accompany Venables, we'd have a bring on each and just short of show of presence. That's, I think it was a bit foolish, really, because we were instructed by Tullock several times to go there, and they could quite easily have disarmed us. So it was a bit foolish, really.
But there was
a nasty incident when we had a very big hut on the docks, where one group of chaps, there was news, I think we went on a platoon at a time and on guard there, and the guard that relieved us on one occasion, they were sitting there cleaning them 36 grenades, and from one pile taking the detonators out and cleaning them, and then reprime them again and put into another. I think it was a corporal picked up a grenade from the wrong pile and pulled the pin out, and of course it set the primer off, and the story is that he tried to get to the door to strike down to the get to the sea, the water, to throw it in, but it exploded before he could get out. And there were I don't know how many were killed, but there were several killed and several injured. But that was one incident. There were other incidents, but I can't particularly remember them now. And then we the announcement came that there was some sort of agreement had been reached, and that there would be no more fighting there. So
there hadn't been, but there hadn't been any fighting anyway.
Not as far as we were concerned.
How did you get on with the Greek civilians themselves, as opposed to the ELAS?
Quite well. When the announcement came that they'd made some sort of peaceful arrangement, it may be. It might be denied, but we were told by the CSM Woods, that there would be no charges against anybody for a month. And for a month there were no charges. And it was a month of pure enjoyment.
What were you doing?
Everybody was, apart from those that were on guard, there were no parades, no drill, anything. And only the they were only people that had anything but when you were put on guard. And apart from that, you could do as you pleased, and we certainly did. I remember the we were told eventually that the good time was finishing at midnight.
So what did you do? What was the good time? How did you enjoy yourselves?
Well, mostly drinking and gambling, and I suppose a lot of them must have been women as well. But,
did you go to the Greek tavernas or cafes?
Oh, yes.
What were they like?
The favourite. Oh, it was quite. You see, being on the coastal town, I suppose there were lots of fishermen there, and you walked into these places, and they would have amazing list of liqueurs. They were probably all synthetic, I expect. So you would start at the top and work your way around all through all the liqueurs, which I didn't like anyway.
What was your favourite drink? There.
Well, I couldn't stand Retsina. It was a very heady drink. It was slightly sweet flavoured. I didn't like it at all. Retsina had turpentine in it, so I didn't particularly like that. There was a drink they called Ouzou, which was fire water. Well, I didn't particularly like that, but nevertheless, people did drink. And what I did like was all of the delicacies that were the little fish that they laid out, and you could eat as much of that as you wanted. But I found that with the Greeks, they either liked you or they disliked you, and there were no half measures, and they let you know. We did maintain patrols into the old town in Salonika. We had a police to occupy the police station there. And I understand that the jeeps that we went into, used to patrol around there, were the first automobiles that had ever been, or first cars that had ever been into old Salonika. Nothing could get up there. Slopes there. They were 1 in 3, 1 in 4, I think. They were terrific slopes. But anyway, the good time finished, and I remember going back with Venables and the talk shone on us, and it was a fellow sergeant. He said, "You're late." And he shone this torch on Venables. He said, "It's you, is it?" And he shone his torch on me, and I remember his words. They're the last words I ever heard from Provost Sergeant Williams. He said, "I might have known it would be you." And he said, "You're late." And Venerable says, "2 minutes to curfew." And Williams said to him, "You're drunk." And Venables drew himself up, he looked downwards with him, he said, "I'm not drunk." And anyway, we finished up. I won't tell you what happened after that, but...
What happened then?
And he put his talk to me, he said, "Well, you're drunk." And Venables looked down at him again, he said, "He's not drunk either." So William said, "Well, get bedded down, the pair of you." So we off we staggered, and I think there must have been either a second or there was a second story, or might have been a third story. I'm not quite sure. I think it was just only two stories of school, and we got into this room. It was a huge classroom, and there were a whole company bedded down in this classroom on the floor, and I got down into my blanket, and it was snowing outside, and Hanover was lying next to me, and I suddenly heard him say, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe." And he got up, and he's folded back, there were huge folding doors, and he folded back the whole length of that. I should think it must have been about 30 feet, the whole front was wide open with the snow whistling through, and Corporal Smith, I'm not, I don't think it is, he was still not a sergeant then. He said, "Venables, close that door." Said, "I'm not closing that door, I can't breathe." So I said, "So you close the door." He's not closing the door either. And so Smith was sort of lying down there, all the people in turn to close the door. And Ben was saying, "I'll kill the man who closes those doors, I can't breathe." Anyway, morning eventually came, and I went downstairs. We were first time we were paraded. It was, what was his name? C.S. Wood, Lackery Wood, he was called, and he was in a foul mood. He had the company like that. He said, "Oh, this has got to stop." He says, "From now on, everybody has got to watch themselves." And he was standing there, and he had a face like a currant bun. And apparently what had happened was that the previous night, all the CSMs and the RSM had been out on the razzle. When the truck came back, picking them up, the driver got around and opened the back of the truck, and said that the wood fell out. And he lied flat on his back, and company sergeant made mantle jumps out straight on his face. You can imagine the state of his face. I'm going to say what a foul mood he was in. But that was the end of it. As I say, that was the end of the good times. And then shortly after that, we were told we were going to Athens and the IRS, and we all marched into a tank landing ship, and off we went to round the coast to Piraeus. I'm told it was a very, very nasty journey, but I don't remember it being so. But I was told that most of the chaps were seasick, but I can't recall it being a bad journey.
And what happened when you got to Piraeus?
Piraeus, we moved off to I think ostensibly we were supposed to be guarding an airport, Athens Airport. I can't remember the name of it. I can't remember the name of it now, but we were in on a went to a small coastal point. I remember there was an island out in the bay, but I think where we were was a holiday resort, or must have been a holiday resort at some time, because there were more or less bungalows. The bungalows gradually disappeared as they were dismantled for firewood, for chaps cooking and whatnot. But I don't recall anything there apart from exercises and going into Athens occasionally.
Had you had your reinforcements?
Reinforcements were gradually coming. Everything was getting back to strength. I think it was in Greece that we had the nuclear. Yes, it was in Greece. It was in Salonika, where we were joined by another platoon commander. What was his name? Lieutenant Green, military medal. So he must have been non-commissioned or a private at some time or other. Lieutenant Green. But apart from exercises, one of the sort of exercises you did did was to be accompanied by Major Tulloch, Major Tulloch and the one of you. I remember one of several times going through with them, and they used to get these condoms, French letters. You used to blow them up, and you'd go around an obstacle, and suddenly find there was this condom waving in the breeze, so you could give it first with a Tommy gun. Well, that was the Hornberg. So we nearly got a very narrow shave with live mortars there.
What happened?
One fell short. They were firing over our heads. The platoon, there was one 2-inch mortar to a platoon, and I don't know who had that, but we were out on the rocks, and again, I suddenly heard Reynolds or Smith shout, and saw them dive to the ground, and I dived to the ground, and I think this 2-inch mortar fell about 10 feet away, but nobody was hurt. But they certainly had good hearing. They could always, and if you followed suit with what they were doing, you didn't go very far wrong.
Now, I'm a bit confused. I thought Tulloch had been killed.
Tulloch wasn't killed.
It was Lawrence and the others.
Lawrence, the batman and the sniper were the ones that killed. Tulloch wasn't killed.
He not wounded either?
No. He was brought in back.
Yeah. He was just lying there. Sorry, I missed that point. Sorry. So, what do you remember the battalion sports day they had there?
Oh, they did have a sports day. I remember it. Of course, there was the Sergeant Plowright was the one that usually had won everything. But he was a very talented chap, certainly a good musician. And because he must have been about well over 6 feet. You know, he was very tall, very big man, and very young as well. But I remember we had a company, a chap in the company, Cook, had been a British Army champion miler, I think, before the war, or champion something or other. And he was confident that he expected to win everything. Why do you ask about the sports anyway?
Just wondering if you remembered it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember this. They only had one, as far as I can recall, and I remember this company sports very well because everybody expected Cook to win this particular race. He was up, he was striding, you know. And there was a little Scotsman, and he had a funny little gate. It wasn't running, it was a sort of, it was difficult to describe, but it was almost a half trot. And anyway, on this particular race, this chap, everybody, some of the fellows laughing at him as he went round. And this course. What happened was he kept up this very sort of measured little trot. And I don't think Cook was really aware of what was happening, but he was trailing Cook the whole time. And when Cook went to make his last sprint, his fellow opened up. And this little Scotsman opened up. And he left Cook standing, but it was quite funny to watch. That's all I remember about those.
Would you enter for any event?
No. Did I enter or was entered? No, I wouldn't have been entered, and I certainly didn't volunteer. I'd learned not to volunteer for anything by then. No.
What about the social life in Athens or Piraeus? What was that like?
We were mostly at this, I can't remember the name of the place, I can't remember it. It was near Athens Airport, and I can't remember the name of the place there. And there was no social life really. I did go to see the on and off day. Went to see the
Parthenon.
Yeah, Parthenon. And that was the benefit.
What about when you went back to Greece, to Italy, sorry?
Oh, yes, we went back to, Italy, and I'm sure it was the troop ship Juniora, which I understood was built to carry 1,000 troops pre-war. When we went to Italy, it had 4,000 on it. And it was quite comfortable as far as I was concerned. I don't know where we landed. It must have landed back at Taranto or Taranto, as they call it.
Now, the war was coming to an end, but did you realise that at the time? Because you never actually went back into action again, did you?
What happened was that we moved back through the forward positions again over the course of the next few days, and we were due to go forward the next. I'm not sure if it was the next day or not. But I remember, I know that they held a church service, and a lot of these, some people were very devout, you know. And the Sergeant Downey was a Catholic, and I remember him coming to me and wanting me to go to the church service. By that time it wasn't voluntary. Once the church services were no longer compulsory, I never went to another church service. But I always had... not envy, but I always felt that people that could put their faith in something, there was, you were losing something if you had no faith in anything. And some of the people were very, quite devout. I remember there was a Sergeant Bryant in earlier years that used to come into the hut where we were, and he would get his Bible out and get a group of chaps around him and sit and read to them out of the Bible. And I know there was one particular, he was a regular, an old soldier, barrack room lawyer. And he used to sit there taking the, making fun or taking the mickey. And I remember Sergeant Bryan saying to him that he should be ashamed of himself. Grutting these young lads, all this sort of stuff. But if you haven't got, if somebody that has faith in something, they have something that I didn't have, and you can understand it, you see. And on this particular occasion, I remember Sergeant Downey saying to me that, you know, go to the service, because we were going back into line tomorrow. And I said no. And I think he came to me about two or three times. And eventually he said to me, do you realise you're the only man in the brigade? They want everybody to go to a service. He said, you're the only man in the brigade that won't go. Anyway, I still wouldn't go, and that was it. But it was either that day or the next day that the war finished. And,
so you weren't really expecting it?
Well, we knew that, you know, the war was coming to an end, obviously. And,
but not just then.
Well, I can't really say one way or the other.
That's fair enough. How did you feel?
Well, it was very quiet for some time, and then as when the evening came, I think it was the Hampshires that started it. They started up to send up their flares and these chandelier flares, lights, everything. And I'm sure it was the Hampshires that started it. And then the whole of the front erupted. And everybody was firing off into the air. There were grenades being thrown about. They got some wine, there were some barrels of wine, and they tipped the rum ration into it. Everybody slowly started to drink too much. All the NCOs disappeared. All the officers disappeared. And it went on for hours. And the whole of the front, the mortars were going up. The Americans, there was an American unit on our flank, and they were being mortared, and they withdrew from the line. I'm told the next day, well, I know there was no ammo left in the company, there were no grenades left in the company, there were no mortar bombs left in the company. Everything had been fired off. And I'm told that Colonel Wilson was furious, the brigade was furious, that when we did move forward, there was nothing left. But I'm told that there were 28 people killed that night. Well, that's what I was told at the time. I cannot in any way vouch for it. I just don't know. But I remember the figure being told that a lot of the casualties had been with a Jeep firing a mounted Bren gun. No, whether it's true or not, I don't know. But undoubtedly, there was so much stuff going up that somebody must have been killed. People throwing 36 grenades about. And that was it.
It wasn't long before you moved off towards Austria, was it?
No, we moved. We moved up, and it was the engineers threw a bridge across the Po. And strangely enough, as we were approaching the Po, I saw someone swimming back across the Po. Must have been a German soldier swimming the Po back towards Austria. But the trying to get back, I suppose. But it was an incredible sight to see the over the next day or so, to see the whole of the German army from northern Italy and from Austria was marching into back towards Italy, or down into Italy to surrender. And I think there were a million men on the march there. The officers were on their horses, and the infantry and service troops all marching behind, all armed. And this went on for a couple of days, as we moved in. We moved into Austria very quickly.
What was their manner like, the Germans?
Very orderly, and no complete silence. Our chaps were shouting and that as they went.
Shouting what sort of thing?
Oh, you know, anything, just jeering and whatnot. But not many, and I don't think that many did. But, it was really quite orderly. The when we went through the Brenner Pass, that was quite noticeable there. The that had been, what did they call it, a pattern bomb. Numerous times, I suppose, but the whole of the past, the bomb holes were more or less going into each other. It was absolutely smothered with bomb holes. And we entered Austria. I'm not quite sure if this was all on the same day or whether it took place over 2 days. I can't recall now. It was all very fast, very quick.